What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Good Morning Liberty. My name is Nate Thurston, and today I am joined by Jonas Stew, who is a Young Voices contributor. Jonas, how's your day going so far?
Well, it's certainly extremely chaotic, to say the least, with the occupation of a major campus building ongoing just hundreds of feet from me.
Yeah, so you're a student at Columbia, which is important for people to know when you answer like that. Why don't you give everyone a little bit of an introduction for yourself?
Sure. So I'm Jonas. I'm a student journalist and commentator at Columbia. I'm a junior who studies political science and economics. And I'm the editor-in-chief of the Columbia Sundial, which is a campus magazine dedicated to investigative journalism and promoting campus discourse. So I've been on the ground at these protests that have taken over Morningside Heights and our campus, covering for the Sundial and just documenting what I've been seeing.
And so we had a bit of a development in this protest story that happened last night, I believe. I'm sure you've answered this question plenty today, but what's going on right now with this protest?
So about 12 in the morning, so midnight, these pro-Palestinian protesters decided to escalate things because the university had ended negotiations, as was saying, hey, we're offering you the chance to voluntarily leave before we suspend you. So what do? They go and they barricade and they occupy Hamilton Hall, which is the centerpiece of Columbia College, which is the major undergraduate school here. And so what they've done is they've sat people inside, and then from the inside, they've barricaded the doors with chairs. And on the outside, they've put, you know, these giant metal picnic tables there. And they formed human chains outside, and they're sleeping there. They're sleeping around all of the entrances, occupying it. Windows have been smashed. Banners saying Intifada have been unfurled from the windows. It's a crazy scene. And I don't even have access to campus today because they've limited campus access to basically you have to live within the gates. And I live in a dorm, but not within the gates. So it's crazy disrupting for a Columbia student right now.
Now, as an outsider, when I look at this, I'll be honest with you. I've said, well, the university is kind of reaping what they've sown. The chickens are coming home to roost. But I don't mean to say that in a way that doesn't take into account how this is inconveniencing you and affecting your life. I was going to ask, I know you have to give me, maybe you could give me a general idea here. How many students would you say are in favor of what's happening right now or against what's happening right now? Do you have any rough estimates on that?
So I think we have to look at first, what percent of students would identify as pro-Palestinian or are sympathetic to the protesters' demands and their overall movement. And I would say that's a clear majority. That you're probably looking at around 60-70% at the very least of the undergraduate student body. And they just did a referendum on this, actually. The turnout was a little bit low, but I think it gave a good sense that that's around where the support for divestment, the support for canceling the Tel Aviv global programs lie. On the other hand, we also have, you know, whether people support the encampment, whether people support, you know, as of today, the occupation of Hamilton Hall. The encampment, I would say, you have slightly less, but still a majority of students are saying, well, this is peaceful protest. I'm sympathetic to their cause. And, you know, I don't think the university should be arresting them as they did last week. And so now with the occupation of Hamilton Hall, things are a little bit different because there are videos going around of they're breaking university property, they're smashing windows, they're just causing disruption and keeping the poor freshmen who live in the dorms around them up all night. No one can study, and now no one has access to dining halls. They can't go to their office hours in person. Just it's a mess. And so I think that this is going to be a very small percentage of students overall that are being like, yes, I support the occupation and that's a good idea and I'm willing to pay the price for it.
Is there any estimate on, you know, they want divestment? I was trying to find this figure today. I know Columbia has this $13 billion endowment and all of that. Do you have any idea how much actual money they are asking to be divested?
Well, a problem for both of us is that nobody really knows, including the protesters. And that's why one of their demands is financial transparency. I think about 99% of the investments Columbia makes aren't public. They aren't required to be disclosed. Now, in the remaining 1%, you can see some holdings of companies like Microsoft and Amazon and Google and Airbnb that are on the boycott divest list. But we really don't know. And to be honest, it does seem that a lot of what they're targeting are the university's investments into broad market funds that have exposure to a wide range of American companies, including ones that they want to divest from, such as like Caterpillar or Boeing or Lockheed Martin. And it's not that the university necessarily owns stock in these. It's just that like they own stock in these funds, and the funds themselves have like 1%, 2% invested. So I think overall, we're not talking about a terribly large amount. But even if we are talking about a large amount, it's through companies that most Americans have some form of exposure to if you're invested in the stock market.
And so I was wondering how this, you know, we've been talking about peaceful protests. We had a guy on that was also a Young Voices contributor, and he was saying the university should leave these people alone as long as they're being peaceful. Don't try to push them to the point that they're going to escalate this. I'll be putting out that interview today or tomorrow also. And I'm wondering how it got to this point and what mistakes did the university make, in your opinion, if any?
Well, I think first and foremost was a failure to consistently enforce the university rules. Now, the encampment was set up on, I believe, Wednesday, the April 17th, and it was set up that morning, and within 36 hours, the NYPD had been called in to clear the encampment after the protesters received numerous warning after warning that they would be suspended, that they were breaking the rules, they were breaking the law. And so the mistake that the administration made was, okay, once we've decided that this is against the rules and that we're not going to tolerate this, they then decided that they weren't going to actually continue to uphold that. They were going to wait and see what happens. So, but you know, what happened, right? More and more people joined the movement because they're like, oh, we don't like the NYPD on campus. So they joined. And then they all migrated to the other lawn and set up encampment there. Right. And then the university is put in a position where it's hesitated on calling the NYPD again, on, you know, actually enforcing its rules. And so they were kind of almost forced into a position of negotiation with the protesters. So they sat down with the organizers of the protests, a lot of whom have, you know, said very anti-Semitic, horrendous things online on Twitter that you can find. But the university is negotiating with these people and they're learning, and they should have known this before they went into negotiations, that the demands are a lot of things like, you know, oh, we're going to fund healthcare and education in Gaza. We're going to work with the Israeli government to make sure that our programs there are inclusive of Palestinians. All of these great things that should be wins for them, but they don't want them. And that's why the university ended negotiations, and that's why they're now occupying Hamilton Hall. So that's sort of the mistakes that they made.
Before we go any further, I'm going to talk to you guys about how our money is losing value every year due to inflation. In fact, the dollar has lost over 98% of its value relative to gold. So what if you could earn income in gold, which can't get inflated away, instead of dollars, where it's definitely getting inflated away? Monetary Metals does just that. They offer the ability to earn income in gold, growing your total ounces over time by leasing or loaning your gold to qualified gold-using businesses. Earn 2 to 5% annually on your gold while supporting qualified businesses in the gold industry. It's your metal and you're in control. Monetary Metals originates and thoroughly qualifies any opportunity before it's listed on their platform. And if you don't like an opportunity, you can simply opt out. You can open an account directly on Monetary Metals' website in less than 15 minutes, fund your account by purchasing gold directly from them at less than 1% over spot, or you can use the gold that you already have. They provide free shipping and insurance and free storage and insurance for any metal in your account. So opt out of the Fed's corrupt financial system and get on your own personal gold standard with Monetary Metals. It's an honest return on honest money the way it's supposed to be. Visit monetary-metals.com/GML for more information or to get started opening your account. And so you're a proponent of free speech on campus. So
absolutely.
Now this is different when you're talking about violence, occupation, things like this. This is someone else's property. There are, I assume, campus rules against what these protesters are doing that they would expect everyone to follow. And so, how do you differentiate between those two, where you're in favor of free speech, even if you maybe don't agree with the things that they are saying? I won't put any words in their mouth, but assuming that's the case, how do you draw the line between those things? And you have a piece talking about the hypocrisy on this. This is something we've talked about as well. I don't think these same protesters would be fighting for the free speech rights of anyone like me to come and say the things that I would like to say on the campus. So, you know, where do you draw the line on this?
Look, I support free speech 100%. I think at a college campus, you need to be exposed to ideas that make you uncomfortable. You cannot demand the university make you comfortable, protect your feelings from ideas or speakers that you might not like. I think that's essential to the purpose of the university. And protest is a great way to bring about those ends. And so I think the first distinction we have to make is free speech versus conduct. And setting up encampment is not free speech. That's conduct, right? Protesting at all hours and making a ton of noise and disrupting student study schedules, that's not speech. That's turning into conduct, right? So when you cross that line from speech into conduct, and it's something that the university can regulate, you no longer get to weaponize the language of the First Amendment and the language of free speech to protect whatever you're doing, right? You don't have a First Amendment right to occupy Hamilton Hall, the same way you don't have a First Amendment right to, you know, rob a grocery store or something because you feel that it's in support of your cause, right? So I think that's the first thing that we have to be clear about. The second thing about the actual language that they're using, I think that, you know, when universities start to, you know, carve different free speech exceptions and say that, oh, like this is hate speech or this is, you know, anti-Semitic and all of these things, and we're now going to start punishing students for that. That's a very dangerous precedent, I think. And I think that because this is such a subjective standard, what is hateful, right? What is harmful? You know, outside of things like inciting people to violence or things that we've clearly defined in the law, that's a very dangerous precedent. And I think universities should be very, very wary of when they make those regulations. So now when we look at the protesters, they're now saying, you know, oh, like protect free speech. You can't just call us hate speech, all of these things. Okay, well, yes, I support your right to free speech, but you can't like claim that you support free speech when in the past you are the same people that went and spewed hate speech, and you know, you're somebody that went and claimed other people were trying to spew hate speech, and you're like, there's no free speech right to hate speech, but when it's convenient for them, they then do it. My perspective is most of what they're saying is protected speech. It should be protected, but I think this raises really important questions about, you know, can and should the university regulate just blatantly anti-Semitic content? And I think that at a place like Columbia, they absolutely can.
So how do you think the protesters rationalize being against hate speech in other instances, but thinking that some of the things that they are saying is okay? Is it, I would say it's because of this oppressed paradigm, I guess, something like that. But I don't know. What do you think it is? How do they rationalize this?
Yeah. So I think the first thing I would say is that they don't really care about free speech at all. And this is a problem on the left and the right, but I think especially on the campus left, this is a big problem where it's we support free speech when it's convenient for us. We're against hate speech when it's convenient for us, i.e. when we're not the ones saying it. So I think that's the main problem. It's like they don't actually care about it. They're using it as a justification for whatever they want to do, right? And then the second thing I would say is I agree that I think the oppressor-oppressed, you know, Marxist intersectional framework, that has a lot to do with this. And I think we see that in just the utter incoherence of a lot of the parts of the movement, right? Suddenly, Palestine is a feminist issue, even though they treat women terribly in Gaza, right? Suddenly, Palestine is a queer issue, even though you would be killed if you were, you know, gay or transgender or whatever. And it doesn't matter to them that these things don't make sense, because they see the world as primarily through an oppressor and an oppressed people's framework. And that, and liberating people from that sort of colonial, you know, apartheid powers, you know, what they call it, that's most important to them. And all the other, you know, interests are subordinate to that. So everybody is able to find some morsel of shared oppression to latch onto and join the movement and start camping and occupying buildings.
Okay, so last question for you. You're put into power tonight, and you have the authority over what's happening right now on the campus. What do you think should be done to end what's currently happening on the campus and make sure it doesn't happen again in the future?
Well, what I would have done is gotten a time machine and gone back to 1 a.m. when they started occupying the hall, because I was there. But you know who wasn't there? Public safety wasn't there. NYPD wasn't there. They were breaking the law, and yet nobody was there to enforce the law. So that's the first thing I would do. But, you know, given where we are now, I think there are clear steps that need to be taken. I think, one, when you're trespassing, when you're doing vandalism, when you're illegally occupying a building, you should be arrested for that. You should be taken out. The university needs to take back control of the building. And that's that. And, you know, I think this is ultimately an outcrop of the encampment, which also needs to be cleared, right? Commencement is coming up. Seniors want a graduation. That's supposed to happen on the lawns. You cannot withhold that from them because you have a group of, you know, stubborn campers who refuse to leave because the university doesn't want to accede to their ridiculous demands. So, you know, first of all, you know, maintain peace and order. Get the campus back, right? Second of all, what do you do with these students that have repeatedly broken the rules and not listened to what the university has warned them or the consequences of such action? You have to actually enact the consequences and send a clear message. This is not okay, and we're not going to tolerate that. I think they should have done this a while ago, and I think they're doing good with the suspensions that they've been issuing. But I absolutely think if you're occupying Hamilton Hall, you should face expulsion. You should face expulsion from Columbia University. It's clear that your values don't belong in the wider community. You're not actually committed to peaceful protest and respectful discourse. You're just trying to make a scene, you know, and you're affecting the lives of everybody else. And so I think this sends a clear message to people that, you know, don't come to Columbia if you're going to do this kind of stuff. And if you do come to Columbia and you do this kind of stuff, we're not going to tolerate it.
All right, Jonas, great, great answer. I hope you stay safe out there. I hope you can get back to sleeping peacefully and maybe even get back to going to class or resuming some kind of normal schedule. So I hope everything ends up well for you out there. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.